This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. Stay tuned now for Chicanismo.
This is Carlos Chavez, and you're listening to Chicanismo on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. You can also log on to my website at chucoradio.com. That's C-H-U-C-O-R-A-D-I-O. Carlos Chavez, and I want to start off by announcing that Chicanismo is now a permanent program. It will air every second Thursday of the month. My next program will be on June 8th, and each program will be between 10 and 10:30. So everybody who's interested in listening, those will be the new dates. Also, part of the program today is going to be an interview with Luis Rodriguez, who I met on a trip to L.A. that I recently went to. There was a lot of interesting people that I met when I went down there, and there were some interesting things going on. It was just before May 1st, May Day, and I'll jump into that a little bit later, but right now I wanted to talk a little bit about what's been going on with the immigration, the border buildup. And before I even get into that, I want to get into some of the myths that I hear as this discussion goes on, just with people that I meet on the street or whoever. These are some of the things that keep popping up, and I want to kind of nip some of this in the bud. So the info that I'm getting this from, this is basically just common myths about undocumented immigrants. And this is from the National Council of La Raza. This fact sheet was put together this year. If you go to www.nclr.org, you'll find this info there, along with a whole lot of other stuff. If you look into the fact sheet section, they've got a bunch of stuff there. But the first thing I wanted to jump on is, and this one is just kind of ridiculous, really, but that undocumented immigrants are lazy. Now, according to the fact sheet, it says 96% of the undocumented men living in the United States are employed, which exceeds the labor force participation rate of legal immigrants and U.S. citizens by 15 percentage points. take that however you want. I'm going to move on after that one because that one is just kind of really ridiculous to me. Anyways, but the next one, undocumented immigrants take jobs from Americans. This is one of the ones that I hear probably the most. You know, this is I think it's a lot of the fear mongering that's going on. But the fact is, according to NCLR, the immigrant labor is needed to fill jobs in the U.S. that an older, more educated American workforce is not willing to fill, especially at the low wages and poor working conditions many unscrupulous employers offer. Currently, there are approximately 9 million undocumented workers in the U.S., filling important gaps in the labor market. There's substantial evidence that their presence in the labor force creates jobs and strengthens local economies. So illegal immigrants aren't taking jobs from Americans. Another thing is that undocumented immigrants do not pay taxes. This is a big one. Indeed, they do pay taxes. All immigrants, regardless of status, will pay on average $80,000 per capita more in taxes than they use in government services over their lifetime. The Social Security system reaps the biggest windfall from taxes paid by immigrants. The Social Security Administration reports that it holds approximately $420 billion from the earnings of immigrants who are not in a position to claim benefits. Soak that one in a little bit because that is a very important one right there. That's a big contribution to Social Security, but our economy as well. Also, here's another myth. Undocumented immigrants drain the welfare system. Okay, fact is, undocumented immigrants are ineligible for the vast majority of state and federal benefits and are only eligible for those that are considered important to public health and safety. In fact, many legal immigrants are also ineligible for most federal benefits. As a result, health care spending for immigrants is approximately half that of citizens that are documented. And then moving on to the next one, this one I think is most relevant to what's going on, especially with the speech that George W. Bush made on Monday. He's building up the border. He talked about sending 6,000 of our National Guard, but it's looking like it may possibly be even more than 6,000. More money's being sent down that way, and our senators just approved the buildup of the border, building up the fences, and funneling more money in there. And now we've got some large companies who are now trying to position themselves to be awarded the contracts to build the detention facilities, which they plan to house all of the immigrants that they detain and possibly criminalize in this process. So Bush is going to build up the border with the National Guard. They're awarding contracts to companies. They've already awarded a large contract to Halliburton. Big surprise. That was actually a renewal of a contract that they were already that they already gave to Halliburton. So these large companies are going to be reaping a lot of the benefits off of this. But building up these fences and building up the borders, for one thing, is just a way for Bush to keep the heavy-duty right-wingers off his back a little bit. And to it's definitely a political move, but we know that it's not going to help the problem at all. It's not going to help the issue at all. But here's the myth, anyways. The best way to stop undocumented migration is by increasing enforcement. Okay, here's a fact. Between 1986 and 2002, the number of border enforcement agents has tripled. The number, probably even more so, because, I mean, here it is, 2006. The number of hours they spent patrolling the border grew by a factor of approximately 8, and the Border Patrol's budget has increased tenfold. At the same time, the number of undocumented immigrants in the U.S. has continued to increase. The other thing that's increasing is the amount of deaths across the border. We're having their record highs of deaths crossing the border. Each year it seems to be getting higher and higher. and the cause of deaths, I mean, definitely the border buildup. It's making it tougher for people to get across the border. So there are many people who are dying of dehydration. There are many people who are, there's a whole slew of different things, hypothermia, vehicle accidents, blunt force injuries, even gunshot wounds. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. But one thing that still stands is that people are, it's definitely going to make things a lot less safe for people who are coming across the border, and they are going to come across the border as long as the economy in Mexico, in Latin American countries south of Mexico, continue to be economically broken down, people are going to continue to come here because they need to work, they need to feed their families. These aren't, I mean, of course, any type of migration of people, especially this amount, you're going to have criminal elements there. But, you know, we know that this isn't where the terrorists are coming from. If terror is what you're worried about, you need to look beyond just the Latino population. But I'm not even going to get into that issue right now. But anyways, right now I'm going to move on to the interview that I had with Luis Rodriguez when I was in L.A. I was at the UCLA Book Festival that they had just April 30th, I believe. It was the day before May Day. And there were tons of authors there. I mean, I can't remember. There's all kinds of people there. I happened to catch three people for interviews. One of them was Jeff Chang, which I hope to use that in a later piece, as well as Omdi Hamilton, who is of the Watts Prophets. But one of the people I was really excited to meet was Luis Rodriguez. He's an author of a handful of very, very good books. One of them is autobiography, Always Running. Hearts and Hands, which I think is a great book on gangs and how that affects our community and how our communities contribute to that. And there's a lot of really good stuff in there. One of the chapters has a really good section just on the history of gangs in the United States, and it goes way back. But he's an award-winning poet, and he also writes fiction. So here's Luis Rodriguez on the day before May Day. First of all, I want to congratulate you on the award that you just won.
Oh,
and just want to get your thoughts on that.
That was from the Patterson Poetry
Prize.
Okay. Well,
and if you could talk about the book that you actually won the award for.
Well, the book is called My Nature Is Hunger. It's my last poetry book, and it's actually a combination of some of the poems from the other books and some new poems. And I just got the Patterson Poetry Prize, which is a very important prize for poetry, and I'm really honored. I mean, there's great poetry out there, and so to be picked out of all the great thousands of poetry books that are probably being looked at, to me is extremely privileged that it happened, and I'm glad, you know.
I was wondering if you could talk on a lot of the events that are happening here in L.A. and all over the country, the rallies. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like a buildup of a movement. It's got the potential, I feel, and the momentum to turn into possibly something similar to what we saw during the 60s. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I actually think it can supersede all that. I think this is a very powerful movement. The fact that the technology allowed people to organize so quickly and across the country, and the young people were all the walkouts and the thousands that could walk out all in one time, to me it's just very powerful, the fact that people can mobilize so quickly. And the issue is galvanizing across the whole community. I mean, among the Latinos, Chicanos, you know, for example, but also among Central Americans and others, they've come together on this issue. But also other people realizing how important this issue is, how it's become the human rights issue for this new century. And even though there's been tensions between African Americans and other people, people have stepped up and said, you know, no, we're with this. African American leaders have stepped up. Even some white working class communities, the progressive whites, they've all understood how powerful this movement was. And I think that's it's probably going to supersede the 60s if it continues, but also if it turns into also about the war and other issues.
How does art, poetry, music come into play in a movement like that?
Well, it's vital. I mean, you know, it used to be years ago where there was movements and all the artists and musicians were like marginalized on the side, you know. I think now it's central. I mean, with hip-hop, conscious hip-hop in particular, people can speak to each other with spoken word, you know, there's poetry events everywhere. And I've been to so many spoken word events. It's all politics. It's all consciousness. There's a lot of that coming out among the youth in particular. So to me, it's central now to organizing and keeping the vision strong, keeping it going, and hopefully it stays to the point where you can really point the direction. People getting strategy out of art, nobody thinks about that. They think strategy sessions over here and we don't have no artists, and the artists over here and they're all totally out of it. Can you imagine if you have real strategy mixed with art so people can learn what to go, what the next step is, and what we have to do through the artists?
Who are some of the up and comings that you see in the Chicano poetry world?
Well, I mean, you know, I think Galaca Press out of San Diego is doing amazing things. Always coming up with new poets and CDs and everything. In L.A., we have just a whole mess of Mark Gonzalez and a few other people. It's a whole mess of really strong voices, spoken word, powerful, great performance-oriented, but also the words are very deep and, you know, and well done. I think the fact that presses are coming out. Theatrical Press still happening. I've been doing it for 16 years, and we're still publishing. Of course, we don't just publish Chicanos. We publish African Americans, Jamaican Americans, Japanese Americans, Native Americans, Irish Americans, whoever. But our main thing is to have that socially engaged poetry. So I think that small presses are going to lead some of that poetry movement.
Some other things that are coming up, like in the news, and I've been seeing a few specials that have popped up here and there on Mara Salvatrucha, and I know that that you specialize in gang youth, and I'd like to hear from you whether you feel that a lot of the it seems to me that some of that is being overly sensitized, like it's being dramatized, and I almost feel as if it's being incorporated some way. I mean, we know that it's being incorporated with terrorism, but along with that, it's being incorporated into this immigration thing as well.
To me, it's the Mara Salvatrucha, like any other gang. They're not the worst gang. They're not, you know, the least worst gang. They're a group of young people came out of refugees, out of war. We create these policies. We were central to that war going on, create all these refugees. They come to L.A. They're poor. They got nowhere to go. What are they going to do? Some of them are going to join the gangs like every group does. And they're going to be into Chicano gangs because that's the number one, you know, style that everybody seems to go towards. Okay, but then our policies deport those kids to those countries. Those kids didn't have any resources in those countries. You got a lot of homeless, abandoned kids. Now they're recruiting like crazy. Now our policies have created something that didn't have to be that way because they should have took care of them when their community. So now many of them are coming back. To me, I look at it as they're being demonized. The reason why they're vulnerable, they're mostly immigrant youth. They're utilizing, they're combining terrorism and anti-immigrant situations so that people have these laws because they're linking terrorism to these youth and to the immigrants. And that's what I see the political ploy. Everybody that knows gang structures in the United States knows that Mara Salvatrucha is not the worst gang, is not the most organized. I could tell you even worse gangs. I'm not going up because then people would demonize all that. But I know what it is. They're very vulnerable, especially in these immigrant communities. And this is why we have to bring the truth about it so that people don't fall in the trap of let's put these kids away, let's deport them. Several hundreds were deported. Nobody complained because they say, well, they're just terrorist immigrant kids, we don't need them. Well, we got to say no, that's not right. They shouldn't treat people that way.
What do you feel about the walkouts that have been happening or that were happening last month? That movie The Walkouts just came out, you know, just prior to that. What do you think about that timing, and what do you think about the walkouts in general?
Well, you know, I was very, as you can imagine, was very amazed and really behind it all the way. I see it as, again, young people finding their their center, finding their connections, having something to believe in, to have a cause that they can be part of. You know, I go to these schools, and what's really sad, I love kids. Kids are great, but man, their schools are totally deadening their spirits, not teaching them anything, their history. These kids are just like going through the motions. Here, they're standing up, they're waking up. I've gone to schools after the walkouts, and the kids are alive, man. They're interested, they're questioning, they're challenging, they're organizing. So to me, like, that's what we needed. People say they shouldn't have walked out. So, hey, man, to me, it's all education. They're not getting in the schools. They might as well walk out and get it in the real world. And I think it's our job as older veteranos, former activists or people who are active now but a little older to come in and guide and help that movement. Not to run it over, not to take over the kids. Kids got a lot of good ideas, but to help give support and guidance. And so to me, I'm really excited about it. And I am going to be on May 1st. Our bookstore is going to be closed as part of the great boycott. And we're also going to probably go to all the marches as many as we can, just be part of what's going on.
You see this movement moving into injustices also in the like the judicial and prison industry, areas like that?
Well, I would like to see that happen. It's hard to say, but obviously because there's people that want to contain things, they want to contain towards one issue. I understand it, because if you diffuse too much, then you don't. They have this issue of the immigrant rights is very important. But I also think that hopefully it's a spark for anybody that's got all these other issues. I'm involved not just for immigrant rights, but I'm also against the prison men of America. I'm against the homelessness issues. I'm against the economic, political, social problems that we're having, including the war. How do we link them? How do we find a motion in which all these issues get dealt with? We have to stop that war. We have to get a better schools for our kids. We have to get immigrants the rights that they deserve as human beings. So then how do we begin to slowly make this a bigger movement that begins to really systematically look at the system and what the system does and the root of every one of these issues?
And also, recently you went down to Venezuela. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what happened down there.
Well, a very great event, the World Social Forum, people from all over the world. I read somewhere 300,000 people showed up from all over the world, I don't know for sure. But I was very active with the Poor People's Campaign. We were people from the United States, poor people, who came down there. And the Venezuelans were like, okay, how in the United States can you have poor people? The United States is so rich. But it was good that they realized that there is very poor people in this country and that we can connect with the poor people there. Because that movement, with Hugo Chavez and them, is coming from the bottom up. The poor people are organizing. The poor people are demanding the government meet their needs. And it's just amazing projects they have. High health care for kids, better schools, technological centers, all these things they're developing. And they got a long way to go because that's a very poor country, just like all these countries. But the spirit and the hopefulness is very strong there. So I was really glad to see it and to be connected to it. And I'm coming back for the World Poetry Festival in July. They've invited me to be part of that. So again, I'll hopefully meet with more people in this time, bring poetry and connect poetry to all those movements.
So what are you working on now?
Well, I got 4 book projects. I got too many book projects, but I'm always constantly having. There are different stages of development. One's a children's book. 2 of them are nonfiction books, and one's another novel. So, I mean, it's different stages of development, but hopefully I'll get them out in a few years.
What's the nonfiction book that you're writing?
Well, I've actually got 2 of them. One of them is a biography of John Trudell, the Native American poet, activist, and I'm working with him on that. And I'm also working on a Mara Salvatrucha book with one of the leaders that has changed his life, and I'm trying to do something around that. So those are the 2 nonfiction books I'm working right now.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Hey, man.
Appreciate it, man. That was author, poet, and political activist Luis Rodriguez. I met with him at UCLA just before May Day. This is Chicanismo on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. My website is chucoradio.com, chucoradio.com. And some of the music that you've been listening to comes from LA musicians such as Quetzal and Quinto Sol. I'm going to leave you with this last one by an artist named Olmeca.
a little way that I think. I'm a hard kid to follow if you follow what I did. I'm following no orders, I'm only pretending to be social, that it makes it easier for me to enter your home. I'm following my own ideology and those connected to it, doing it since 2013, best believe. I'm independent and ready for anything, many things, many eyes and years in this force. I can see I'm regulating the masses as an X on a red cloud. Lion Eye Jaguar, I'm seeing them proud. I'm a revolutionary, internally human being. I'm a lost child, born in the wild, 500 years. I'm the culmination of too many shed bed years. I'm the problem to the establishment in their skin. And it seems that it seems to be loose in a bag of seeds, spreading fruits on the streets. So it grows and it breeds fellow seeds to proceed with progress to profess under quest to protest the spiritless. Warrior instinct, an instinct, exhilarating sense of ability to connect with principles of self-sufficiency. My soul as a servant of the heavens insurrection, injecting the fire burn with good intention. Holler back with the now when I say revolution, revolution, now, revolution, now. Hollow words speaking utter repentance, attention, a problem that the president faces. Attendance is greater than the leader's commencement. Intention from the people is independent. A people enslaved in a barricaded city, you're straight, forsaken in hell by devil supremacy. Centuries of commonwealth outlook, insecurity, leading to divinity and finally slavery. Desde el 510 pueblo le transmute bien contra la basura del presidente inconsecuente. Viene la gente después con una gran inquietud, derrotando lo que fue vida justa otra vez.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Coming up this morning on KBOO Next, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, the guest is Joe Hatcher, Iraq War vet working for peace. He'll speak with KBOO's Per Fagerin. At 10:15, the guest is Dr. Mary Wynne Ashford, the former president of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. She'll speak in Portland this weekend on looking at the Iraq War using a medical paradigm. At 10:30 on Art Focus, Julie Bernard's guests are local poet and sculptor Keith Jellum and Stacey Fletcher. They'll discuss the work of noted sculptor Hilda Morris. And at 11, Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Will look at a proposed legislation that would rewrite Internet privacy rules and require service providers to track what users do online in order to help police to conduct criminal investigations. The show also looks at proposed changes by the Environmental Protection Agency that would dismantle the program, which tracks the amount of toxic chemicals manufacturers release into the environment. All that coming up this morning on KBOO.